This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming today, we are slated to be joined by Chris Warner. Dr. Warner, a longtime writer and journalist in Louisiana, now living in Alabama, was an avid supporter of President Trump in 2016 and remains bullish on the 45th American president. Faye Williams, the head of the National Congress of Black Women, she backed Hillary Clinton. She does not like the first year and a half of President Trump. She'll be with us along with Mike Wolf. We're slated to hear from the libertarian lawyer, Mike Wolf, who backed Gary Johnson for president in 2016. And Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, on what's happening with the governor and the legislature now that the fiscal cliff has been averted. And oh, by the way, come Monday, President Trump's expected to name his nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now the news. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great Independence Day, and we're glad you're spending time today with WRKF, and your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Outside the area, anywhere you are, it's 877-217-5757, and our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We have three distinguished guests to start our program today. Faye Williams, Dr. Faye Williams, of course, longtime Louisiana politico, the pride of Alexandria, head of the National Congress of Black Women. She is with us and is here as a supporter in 2016, avidly of Hillary Clinton, and also joining us from Alabama, another Louisiana politico, Chris Warner, who's a prolific writer, and we'll get to his latest work, but he is a backer of President Trump, and Mike Wolf, the longtime libertarian. He's been living in New York the last year or so, but he's back in Louisiana, and the noted lawyer recently, as in the last few days, has been in New Orleans for the National Libertarian Gathering. It looks like the party of Gary Johnson in 2016 is going to go with the former governor of Massachusetts, William Weld, as its standard bearer in 2020. But Mike Wolf backed Gary Johnson in the year of 2016. And Mike Wolf, let's begin with you. President Trump is nominating a candidate, a nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court on Monday. Anthony Kennedy shocking many by announcing last week that he is leaving the court after three decades. And it is expected that the president will choose a conservative, perhaps a conservative from Louisiana, Amy Coney Barrett. Remember that name, 46 years old, graduate of Dominican in New Orleans and of Rhodes College and University of Notre Dame Law School. Your thoughts about the significance of the Trump appointee?
Well, it's, of course, extremely significant. It could determine the ideological majority on the Supreme Court for many years, especially if he appoints a young jurist in the person's 40s. So it'll be very significant. But those who have been saying the sky is falling, I think, are overstating it. I've got in front of me an editorial from the Wall Street Journal, Tuesday's Wall Street Journal, and they're contending that even appointment of any of those people from the Heritage Society and Federalist Society list would not necessarily overturn Roe versus Wade, because many of them believe in precedent, and they think it would be disruptive. So you can't predict the outcome, although some people are predicting that it's automatically that Roe versus Wade is already dead. But it is very important, but it's hard to tell exactly where the judicial winds will blow on particular cases.
Dr. Faye Williams, joining us from the nation's capital, what are your thoughts about how significant this appointee will be?
Well, it's going to be very significant, particularly to women and people, you know, who are in the minority in this country, because the country is not so great for us in many aspects right now. I certainly hope, I have no problem with the conservative as long as the conservative is fair, but I don't even say that established law has to be what they are following. You know, at one time, slavery was the law, so that isn't it. I just want something that is morally correct, somebody who is fair, somebody who is willing to listen to both sides and decide based upon the real family values, not the ones that now we're seeing that are coming out of the Trump administration.
877-217-5757 is your number, and Chris Warner, we're going to hear from him as well in just a moment, but Senator Kennedy, John Kennedy of Louisiana, has sent out a missive saying, as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I look forward to sitting down with President Trump's nominee and asking some tough questions. I will be looking for someone of great intellect who has more than a passing fondness for the U.S. Constitution and doesn't think personal preferences have a role in judicial decision-making. In short, writes Kennedy, I'm hoping Justice Gorsuch has a brother or a sister who is willing to serve. Now, it's apparent that Senator Kennedy wants somebody with an open mind, but apparently an open mind that is very conservative. Chris Warner, is there anything particularly nefarious about this?
Well, I don't think there's anything nefarious about following the letter of the law, the Constitution, and I think that that's what the president is trying to ensure, that he gets a justice on the court via the Constitution prescription that will follow the letter of the law.
Steve Winnem of St. Francisville, the former budget director for the state of Louisiana, has a question for you, Chris, already, saying, Chris, you and I worked together in the 90s. I find myself wondering if your support of the president is a matter of the ends justifying the means, and if so, what ends are you seeking? That from Steve Winnem. Chris Warner.
Well, I remember Steve well, and I appreciate the comment. You know, I'm a student of government. I went to LSU on academic scholarship and studied political science and business, and I have a terminal degree from the University of New Orleans. Now, that only means that I'm trained to be an academic. I don't practice academia, but I do live in a fact-based world, and I was trained to look at facts. And any independent voter like I am, 42% of the electorate are now independent, which eclipses both parties now, and I predict the demise of both parties within my lifetime. I think I'll see that. I was put in a difficult situation. I had to choose between Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. The latter I find reprehensible. She is a liar and a proven traitor to our country, and we could not have her in the Oval Office. Now, he is not perfect, but he has handled himself well, I believe, on behalf of the forgotten middle class.
All right, Dr. Williams, Dr. Warner just said that Hillary Clinton is a liar and a traitor to our country. Your thoughts?
I'm sorry, did you mention, are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Well, absolutely, I don't agree with that. We have a president now who does not believe that anybody knows any more than he does. He doesn't take the advice of our generals, our diplomats, intelligence officers, even the senators and members of his own party. He is betraying our country by throwing all of our people who have worked, who fought along with us, who've done many things and been our friends for many years. I think that's more like a traitor. And besides, he's on his way against the advice of many people in this country, many leaders in this country, to meet with Putin all alone. Why does he have to meet with them all alone if they're not secrets about his behavior and what Putin knows about him? That, to me, is really what is it, being a traitor to the country.
Dr. Williams, it appears that some Democrats may very well have the final say on the nominee from President Trump, because he may lose a few Republican votes, and he has a very small margin of error there. And,
absolutely. And then, of course, another test is going to come in November, as people are already boning up on what the issues are, you know, looking at this president's record and what he has done, even against the people who are sticking with him. Some of them have to admit that some of the plans he has now are to eliminate pre-existing conditions. He's still trying to with Obamacare and that kind of thing. So, you know, the people will have the final say.
Mike Wolfe, a few moments ago, said that Roe v. Wade's not necessarily under siege with the new nominee. Do you think it is?
I think it is. It always has been with the Republican Party, and that's the party that's in control now. So while Trump is saying that he will not ask that question, certainly senators will ask the question, and we will know whether the person is against Roe v. Wade, which is established law.
All right, 877-217-5757. We plan to go to the phones in short order with Mike Wolfe, Chris Warner, and Dr. Faye Williams, Dr. Warner as well. And they certainly have different points of view. And you heard Chris say that his numbers say that about 2 out of 5 voters are independent, Mike, and you, of course, have been a longtime libertarian, and we're seeing this great division in the ranks right now with supporters of the president and supporters of Hillary Clinton, who did win the popular vote by more than 3 million votes. Can this be resolved, or are we going to have even more division in 2020?
I hope there'll be more.
You hope there'll be more.
Yes, well, because what Chris was saying is absolutely true. About 40% of the country are independents, neither Democrats nor Republicans, and more people every day are registering with third parties or as independents. And that is the best trend for the country. We're not going to improve if we keep pursuing the policies of the Democrats and the Republicans. So either the policies of those parties have to change or we have to put new parties into power. So it represents a great hope for all of us that more people are voting independent and third party.
When it comes to the Supreme Court nominee, it's going to be almost a party line vote. There will be a few strays here and there, but Susan Collins, the senator from Maine, says she's a Republican. She cannot vote for any nominee who would abolish Roe v. Wade or vote to abolish it. How do you know that? How do you know how a justice is going to vote?
You know, that's a good question. And I want to be clear that I do believe Roe versus Wade is under siege, to use your words. It's very much threatened, as Ms. Williams said. But it may not be overturned if we put a conservative justice in there, but you're going to have to just probe them and find out their deepest
views. It would come down, I would think, to Justice Roberts, who, of course, surprised many with his vote on the Affordable Care Act, and I think he's now the swing vote on the court.
That's what they're saying, yes.
877-217-5757. We return with Williams, Wolf, and Warner after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Mark Ballard, who's at the Capitol, but we're continuing our discussion with three people with different points of view about what's happening in the world. Libertarian Mike Wolf, and I've referred to him as the godfather of the Libertarian Party. He was there before libertarians got a lot of national note, and now it appears with the division between the two major parties that the Libertarian Party has an opportunity, and they're going to William Weld, most likely, as the nominee for 2020, the former Republican governor of Massachusetts. And in New Orleans, there was just a convention with William Weld holding front and center. Dr. Ife Williams narrowly missed winning a congressional seat in Louisiana in one of the closest races on record with Clyde Holloway, and she has been in Washington for the last many years as head of the National Congress of Black Women, and has been named many times as one of the 100 most influential African Americans in this country by Ebony Magazine. And Dr. Chris Warner, a prolific writer and scholar who backed Donald Trump. He says he's one of the 40% of Americans who is independent. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. You know, President Trump recently said that he's the first president to be elected and carry the state of Wisconsin as a Republican since Eisenhower. And I guess I don't have enough time to state the other blatant, outrageous lies that the president has recently told. What does that say about the president's intelligence, mentality? Is he out of touch with reality? Is he mentally disturbed or unbalanced? It's frightening that this person is going to have the next Supreme Court nominee chosen that could be on the bench for more than 40 years to make critical decisions about people's lives.
All right. Chris Warner, your thoughts about whether the president is a stable genius, as he has stated.
I'm sorry, Jim. I'm certain you're speaking to me. I just heard the tail end.
I did.
I'd love to speak to the gentleman from Wisconsin.
From Atlanta, about Wisconsin. The president did say that he was the first Republican since Eisenhower to carry Wisconsin. And of course, that's totally incorrect. He's made a number of statements that they go beyond hyperbole. They're just not right. They're not factual. And it's not fake news. But does that really matter?
Well, no. I didn't know whether or not that was a fact or not. And if the president misspoke, it is your job. And I think you're a terrific journalist in that regard. You hold people accountable. And if the president misspoke, he should be held accountable for his statement. However, the minority population in America is working at a higher clip than ever.
Is doing what?
Blacks are, they're working at a higher clip than ever before. Women have now assumed a larger portion of the workforce than ever. So blacks, Hispanics, females are all now a bigger, more productive part of the American workforce.
Is there anything, is there anything wrong with that?
No, I think it's wonderful because it's a direct result of tax cuts by our president. It's a direct result of leadership. And this man, unlike his predecessor, who was nothing more than an empty suit, according to Clint Eastwood, this man is a real leader.
Faye Williams, Dr. Williams, your thoughts about President Trump in the words of Dr. Warner being superior to his predecessor.
Let me just say that, first of all, the president is allowed to misspeak only so many times, and he's, quote, misspoken so many times that it seems that he's not even narrowly intelligent. And I think that's one of the problems. No one knows when to believe him or not. And as for women having more jobs and blacks having more jobs, et cetera, this certainly didn't happen under this administration. I believe that started under President Barack Obama's administration. Unfortunately, there's some people who just cannot give President Obama any credit. But you know what I hope all sides will do is just settle down, think, and consider and tell the truth, consider what is right, not selfish, without anger, without hate, and do what's in the best interest of our country, not what's in the best interest of a small segment of the country. While we have to protect their rights, I don't think that we are necessarily now working in the best interest of the country. I would vote for an independent. I would vote for a Republican. I would vote for anybody who is for the best interest of working people instead of just rich people, for the best interest of women, those who are for peace and justice, and those who are for health care for all.
All right. We're going to go to the phone lines. There's some people waiting to talk to Drs. Williams and Warner and lawyer Mr. Wolf. Jennifer in Mid-City. Hi, Jennifer. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. A few minutes ago, one of your guests talked about the letter of the law. And I was wondering what y'all's comments are, you know, when towards the end of President Obama's term, they would not vote on his Supreme Court nominee. That doesn't seem to me following the letter of the law. I would like to see, in the same vein, then waiting till this election passing before we vote on a nominee, if that's the way we're going to play the game. And I'd like to hear comments about that.
Mike Wolf, your thoughts about the nominee Merrick Garland? He was sitting out there for over a year and didn't get a hearing, didn't get a vote. Mitch McConnell stopped it, and now Mitch McConnell is saying we got to get this done right now with President Trump nominating a successor to Anthony Kennedy. Your thoughts?
Typical Republican hypocrisy.
Republican.
Yes. And I hope the Democrats are able to hold up Trump's nominations and give him a little tit for tat. But that was terrible what they did with Judge Garland and with Obama. And the what's good for the goose is not good for the gander with Republicans. But this point about what's going to happen in a couple of years and the accountability of Trump for economic conditions and so forth is really important to consider. But what strikes me is that so many people voted for Trump not because they liked him positively, but because they disliked Hillary. They saw him as less bad than Hillary. And the Democrats seem determined to out-Hillary themselves and try to nominate another socialist that's going to turn off the broad middle of the country even more. We can blame Trump on the Democrats for running Hillary against him. And so now that they're running headlong into doing the same thing again.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Drs. Warner and Williams and Mike Wolf. Hi, Dan.
Yep.
All right, Dan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Warner, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, will the Republicans be willing to forego their Grover Norquist pledge in order to pass taxes to pay for the health care and education of children born to mothers forced to bear children they cannot afford to pay for?
All right. What are the implications of this nomination and likely confirmation of the justice nominated by the president, the current president, Chris, Dr. Warmer?
Well, again, you know, we're dealing with the Constitution. It's the document that drives our actions as Americans. You know, it's been this way for some time. Politics is part of who decides what, when, where, and how much. That's just the way it is. And yes, it was deplorable about Merrick Garland, but that's politics. It's the system that we have in place to decide who gets what, when, where, and how much. And we have made advancements in society, and we're not as racist as we used to be. We had a black president. White guilt may have played a part in electing him, but he should be held accountable. Obamacare was an absolute disaster to working Americans. People who work for themselves were devastated by the policy.
Dr. Williams, my guess is that you have a much different opinion about the effects of Obamacare. Dr. Faye Williams, your thoughts about Obamacare? Let's see if we can get Dr. Williams back. Faye, are you there? All right, I'm going to have to get her back, Allie. Mike Wolf, do you think Obamacare has been the disastrous legislation that Chris Warmer indicates it is?
Yes, I tend to agree with Chris on that. Yes, I think it was a big mistake. And one of the major reasons is because it wasn't paid for, like so many of the government programs. Everything being proposed by the Democrats almost is not paid for.
Well, okay, that may very well be the case, but the deficit, which was a huge issue with President Trump, is going way up under him, way past Obama's last several yearly deficits. The president has fallen short of his goal in that regard.
That's absolutely right, and that's why I use the term Republicrat. The budget busters are Democrats and Republicans, and neither one of them is serious about bringing down the deficits and the national debt.
877-217-5757. We have Faye Williams back, and we'll get to Dr. Williams as well with Mike Wolf and Chris Warmer. We've got them a little while longer. Now the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing. Come Monday, President Trump is inclined to name his nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court. He's got one for one. He got last year Neil Gorsuch through the hoops, and it was a relatively close vote, but Neil Gorsuch is on the court. He's a young man, will likely be there for a long time. The president is expected to choose another youthful nominee, and it may be 46-year-old Amy Coney Barrett, a native of New Orleans, who is a stalwart from the right and is on record as saying Roe v. Wade was bad law. 877-217-5757. Doctors Faye Williams and Chris Warmer with us, along with lawyer Mike Wolf, a libertarian. Faye Williams backed Hillary Clinton. Chris Warmer backed Donald Trump in the 2016 election, and they believe they were right in their respective decisions. Now, Faye Williams, we lost you a moment ago, but both Warmer and Wolf said they thought Obamacare was bad for the country, and this, of course, is another issue that could come before the high court once again. Your observation on whether the Affordable Care Act was helpful or hurtful, by and large, to the American people?
Well, from my side of the fence, the American people have been happy to have health care. Some have criticized it, but certainly have not wanted to get rid of it without having something better to replace it. And while the Republicans have tried many times to get rid of it, they've not offered anything better to replace it. So I think I would be for continuing Obamacare until someone else, whomever, Republicans, Independents, or Democrats, come up with something that is better. Our people need this health care. They've wanted it for years and years and years, and President Obama was the first one to be able to get it. Now, there are many people now who want, you know, health care for all, for everybody. I support that, and if there's a candidate who supports it, no matter which side of the party he or she is from, I would support that.
Jim on the Baton Rouge line. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I just heard you made a comment about the Supreme Court making law. They don't make law. They just rule on existing law. And as far as Roe v. Wade, that wasn't a law. That was a court case.
Well, it's been the law of the land for the last 45 years.
No, it hasn't. The Supreme Court doesn't make law. Congress makes law. It was a court case.
And well, I know what you're saying, Jim, but the essence is that the Supreme Court is the final final court on things like this and can overturn or uphold laws that are passed by Congress.
Well, yeah, that's true. But actually, I think we got better fish to fry right now than that.
All right. Well, thank you for your call and your observation. But the Supreme Court is perhaps the most powerful entity in all the country. And Mike Wolf, we've got not only the prospect of President Trump getting a solid majority from the right, but Justice Ginsburg, who's had some health issues, 85 years old. Stephen Breyer's past 80, I believe, two Clinton appointees. What happens if one of those justices either retires or dies? Then President Trump could really put an imprint on the country by virtue of having these court appointees for a very long time.
That's true, and it'll reinforce for everyone paying attention the importance of the presidential election. And it shows that, as they say, elections have consequences. But the caller reflected a misunderstanding that I think Mr. Warner showed a little bit with his early remarks. People don't understand what law is. Law is not simply statute law. Law is, in general, case law and statute law. Law are the norms of judicial behavior that we recognize and defend in a society, and they're not all written down, and that's why judges are said to find the law. But every judicial decision is a creation of law. It resolves that dispute and enacts the law for that dispute to resolve it. So law is, at the very least, case law as well as statute law, and people don't understand this. The courts always make law when they make decisions.
Well, and the court, another listener points out, is certainly the most powerful entity in the country because the court ultimately decided the 2000 election on a 5-4 vote.
Sure.
George Bush won the presidency when the recount in Florida was stopped by the high court.
And by the way, the thing that's most fascinating to me about American political culture is that the society accepts the decision of those 9 judges.
They up until now.
Yes.
But is there a danger, Dr. Williams, that let's say if Roe v. Wade is overturned, is there going to be a revolution in this country?
I think so. Women are very serious these days. You can look at all of the protests that we've had, not only in this country, but around the world, where women are saying that, you know, our rights matter. In this country, it is unfortunate that many women do not even have any rights in the Constitution. When you talk about an Equal Rights Amendment, that seems such a simple thing to do, other than the fact that somebody is insecure and does not want women to have an equal playing ground, just like there's still people who do not want black people and Latinos and others to have an equal playing ground. It's time for us to live up to what we say America is. We need justice. We need peace. We don't need to lose the laws that we have protecting people, but that's exactly what's happening under this president. You know, there's a question about how he became president. We still haven't resolved that. There is the Mueller, investigation that's trying to figure that out. And I don't think people voted for a liar, even those who are still supporting him. I don't think they voted for an angry person who cares about nothing but himself.
All right, 877-217-5757. Chris Warner, by the way, has written several books about the Southeastern Conference from an athletics perspective. And as I've noted, President Trump carried all 11 states of the SEC, all by handsome margins, with the exception of Florida, which was a one-point victory for him. That's 150 electoral votes in the Southeastern Conference. Jimmy Carter, by the way, 40 years prior, a Democrat, carried all 11 states of the current SEC. Chris Warner, we've got a division in this country that's not only a philosophical one, but a regional one. And you have lived in Louisiana and Alabama. And my understanding is that in Alabama, where Doug Jones scored an upset victory over Roy Moore for the U.S. Senate, you still have candidate after candidate who are latching on to the coattails of President Trump in the state you now call home. Is that accurate?
Well, first of all, I live in Pensacola, and I've been a citizen of Pensacola. I guess
all right. Well, you're close. You're close.
For 4 years, I wasn't able to vote for that election. Of course, I work very near the Alabama line. I talk to people every day, and, you know, they'd ask me, who are you voting for, Doug Jones or Roy Moore? And I said, you know, I don't live there. But the only way that I would vote for Roy Moore is if you would sever my arm from my body and bring it into the booth and pull the lever for him. I thought the guy was the most detestable, deplorable, disgusting candidate in my life. There's no way I would have voted for him. I would have voted for Doug Jones, just on principle, human decency. Now, we will see the erosion and the eventual death of our parties in America. We have to look past the platitudes and look to ideas that will bring us forward. Human beings were put on this planet to overcome, to rise above, and we've got to get past the bickering and work for us together. Human beings are more alike than we are different. Coach Dale Brown, my mentor, says it all the time.
James in Metairie. Hi, James. You're on with Wolf, Warner, and Williams.
Wow. Thank you, Jim. Good morning. The gentleman's last comment there, yeah, human beings are the same, but we react to different situations differently, to stimuli differently. We all have equal rights, but we don't have equal physiologies and things of that sort. I want to talk about general impression about Donald Trump. I feel as if our country has been invaded by some sinister, nefarious force that wants to overturn so many things, so much progress that the country has made, that society has made. And it's like a subterranean nefarious force that has emerged. You know, it's not from a foreign force, but some very dark and evil forces in the country. I want to talk about real quickly about the trade wars that Donald Trump is apparently might be engaging in, and how it's affecting trade, the industry of trade in the state of Louisiana. Looking at a Bloomberg article, it says that economic output in the state could be hurt the worst amongst all the states by maybe 7% decline over a period of 5 years.
All right. Thank you, James. Chris Warner, your thoughts about the trade war that the president has engaged in with other countries. Is it going to hurt Louisiana substantially? Is it worth the fight?
It's absolutely worth the fight. If you look at it as a total sum game, the United States have been getting its rear kicked for decades now, and no one has paid attention to this because the lobbyists and the people in Washington, D.C. look the other way and they do what their masters tell them. But we have to right this ship. We've got to become more competitive because they're winning and we're not. We have rebuilt China, and that's wrong.
Dr. Williams, trade war, many conservatives are saying, I heard Orrin Hatch say, this is horrible, these tariffs. What do you think?
I would agree that experts are already saying the trade war, you know, is catastrophic, not only for those of us who call ourselves progressives or liberals, but also for some of the very people that Mr. Trump had vote for him. It seems that he doesn't care about anybody but himself. He doesn't care who he's hurting, as long as he can hold on to people voting for him and, you know, looking up to him and trying to, you know, just be there and make him look good.
All right. Now, Mike Wolf, what about the trade war?
Well, it's terrible. Yes, it's a horrible policy decision. I agree with the other speakers on that point. Oh, well, except Mr. Warner thinks it's going to be a good thing, thinks that it's going to help us out. But no, that's not going to help us out. And back to this question of deciding on Trump to begin with, Trump was not temperamentally qualified to be president. In terms of character and personality, he was not qualified. Most people, though, who voted for him.
Well, I do, before we leave, and thanks to Faye Williams, Chris Warner, and Mike Wolf, I do want to note that Chris Warner has a book, a novel, a very good one. He is an accomplished writer that has very little politics. They Met at the Alabama-Florida Line, a novel by Chris Warner. Thank you, Dr. Warner, Dr. Williams, and Mike Wolf. It's been a pleasure. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and Mark Ballard is our guest. Our weekly treat from the man who is a Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana, now the largest paper, and of course it prints 7 days a week. 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard, before we get to the goings-on at the Capitol, where every day is happening, even when they're not in session, today is the 2-year anniversary of the shooting of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, and it appears it's going to be a quiet day.
It looks that way I know there was much concern about it last night and today, but it does look like it's going to be a quiet day.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, that would be a good thing.
but it is amazing what has happened in 2 years, and in particular the summer of 2016. I'm sure books will be written about it, with the shooting of Alton Sterling and then the shooting of the police officers and then the historic flood. All of it happened in the span of about, well, it was less than 60 days. It was July and August of 2016. It was an amazing time.
Yeah, I guess it was, what, from July 5th through about mid-August.
Yeah. And we have never had a time like that, and that's a good thing. But it is interesting how the Sterling shooting pulled us apart as a community, and yet the other two events, the shooting of the police officers and the flood, it pulled us together.
It seemed to. It seemed to. Now, I need you to knock on wood, because we are fixing to come into the height of hurricane season. So.
We are, but now they're forecasting a lower than expected number of hurricanes. That would be a welcome thing, but you never know.
Yeah, well, they also didn't forecast that rain event to cause the flooding in August of 2016.
That is correct. That is correct. Forecasters are quite often fallible humans, as are the rest of us. Now, the forecasters at the Capitol have had a field day for the last 2.5 years as well, and Governor John Bel Edwards has finally gotten a deal. Is it a deal that is good enough to satisfy the budget wants and needs of all constituents?
Not totally. I mean, it's certainly better than what was being discussed the week that we went into that final those final negotiations, the days that we were going into that final negotiations. But it remains to be seen whether this slight increase in sales taxes is going to cover all 7 years, because we increase the sales tax for 7 years, and presumably that'll take care of the year in and year out deficits. Wall Street seems to think so, and there's a lot of hope for that. But then, you know, there's so many other factors that go into it that we may be revisiting this before the end of the 7 years. Right now, Southern Board of Supervisors is pointing out that they did not get a full funding of higher education, which is kind of what the storyline has been. They're saying they got flat funding, which means that they are going to lose about 5% of their money when you kind of bring in the adjusted costs as they go from year to year and the mandated costs. So when government didn't get everything that it wanted or in many cases needed, but it got enough to keep going.
And to avoid substantial cuts, the TOPS program remains intact. But long term, if things don't change, the cost of that will grow. And when costs grow, there's always a need for more revenue. What gives on TOPS long term?
Well, it's the same problem with trying to fix the fiscal structure, in my opinion, is that and that is that there's no real courage among the legislature, not just this one, though this one has shown a remarkable lack of courage, but in previous years. I mean, we've been talking about this, back to Buddy Romer, talking about this really, I mean, back to the long era of just kind of putting little patchwork together to balance the budgets and to come up with enough money to cover services that the legislature won't cut, but keep growing. And I think TOPS, there's been repeated sustained efforts to try to reorganize TOPS so that it would be not as expensive as it has become, and they've been unable to do it.
What was the catalyst, Mark Ballard, for getting a consensus on the budget? Because you and I talked, it looked for a few perilous moments, maybe more than a few, like this was all going to fall apart again.
It did. I believe it was like on the Friday morning prior to the weekend that they finally came to an agreement on it. And I don't want to sound cynical, but I think that the main catalyst was they just did not want to come back. They wanted to be done with it. So they came to an agreement that was between the 4% that was being pushed by House Republicans and the 5% that was being pushed by the House Democrats, and that was basically 45% of a penny, or you know, retaining 45% of the penny that was going to expire. But that got them close enough to filling the budget needs, and it got a, you know, where everybody could be happy about it, or I guess happy is the right word. But I do think that the main catalyst for all of this is that the legislature didn't want to come back again.
A listener, Tracy at the Capitol, says that there is evidence that both Senator Kennedy and former Senator Vitter were behind the scenes working to try to defeat a budget compromise. Is that accurate?
Well, I would like to see that evidence. We heard rumblings of that, that was what was going on. But I've yet to have one of the legislators come and tell me, you know, yes, I got a phone call from David Vitter, or yes, I got a phone call from John Kennedy. But we did hear a lot of rumblings around that.
But philosophically, those two gentlemen have a position that is shared by many, that we don't have a funding problem. We have a problem that goes to whether we are funding things properly. In other words, there are things that can be cut that have not been cut. Jay Darden, I remember at times through the years when he talked like that, but when he became Commissioner of Administration, he said, look, we got to do this. Who's right?
Right. Well, Darden is quick to tell you that, you know, when he was first came to the Senate 20 years ago, that he was one of the bomb throwers, too. And as time goes on and he understands the budget more, he became more of a, we got to do something practical here. And he raises an interesting and I think valid point that had David Vitter won, that he would be doing pretty much the same thing. The numbers wouldn't have changed. The situation wouldn't have changed. And the possible outcomes that needed to do would have been roughly the same thing. They may have argued philosophically over which taxes to raise, and philosophically over, you know, how deep of a cut that the Department of Health can take. But nevertheless, it would have still been a mixture of taxes and cuts, as Governor John Bel Edwards put into place.
We lost Anthony Buddy Joseph Amoroso IV Saturday in a bicycle accident in St. Francisville, 61 years old, and his services begin today, 5 to 9 is the visitation at Rest Haven Funeral Home, Jefferson Highway, another visitation tomorrow, 10 to 1, and a graveside service for the family. Private funeral will be held at Christ Presbyterian Church, where Buddy was a member. This is a loss to the community, Mark.
It came as a total shock to me. I mean, I was, what can you say? It was a total shock. It's not the first fatal bike accident that has happened up in St. Francisville, but this one was certainly a very shocking one. And I guess that means that there's going to have to be another election on the Metro side.
Yep,
fairly soon
in March, then there will be an election. So here we go again. But we'll be catching up with Mark Ballard again next week. If things go according to form, it's always good to get your view. Thank you, Mark.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jim.
See you soon. Bye-bye. Also noted is the passing of Henry Butler, a pianist whose flamboyant two-fisted traditions of New Orleans were the talk of the nation. He ultimately lived in New York, died at 69 years old on Monday. He was blind, but the New York Times noted, it didn't stifle his virtuosity or even a pursuit of photography. He even got into painting. He was an amazing guy. And a quote from Steve Bernstein saying, no one had a left hand like him. Steve's a great trumpeter in his own right. Here is Henry Butler with a song that I think many will remember, a piece of music that Marvin Hamlisch made world famous in The Sting, but Henry does it quite well himself, The Entertainer. ¶¶
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org.